Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, solo show showcasing Senra. So actually, I believe this is the first time I've ever rode solo on the Fantasy Pod. Anyone who listens to the Full Press Packers Pod will know that I will sometimes do solo episodes there. But yeah, fantasy-wise, I don't think I've ever done this. I've, you know, sometimes no co-hosts, but I've always had a guest. So going to be interesting. Normally go through, you know, what we've been doing the last 2 weeks anyway. Kayla and Alessandro will go through my rankings, basically point out where they think I'm crazy. To be fair, sometimes the, you know, discussions with them have led to me making some adjustments in rankings. So I do actually find that exercise quite helpful. If you want to check out my rankings now, they're up on fullpresscoverage.com or the Full Press Coverage app. So you can see just a, you know, quick rundown of that if needed. There's, you know, some change, you know, some positions there's massive shifts, other positions not, especially at the top, not much difference. I know tight end, I think I have the same top five basically, and then, you know, if you look at my preseason rankings, you look at the top nine I have right now, I think, you know, George Kittle's not in there because he's hurt, but basically it would be the same top 10, right? So I think you've kind of find where the targets are at tight end. I've had Jonnu Smith in the top, I have him at 7 right now, even that feels low, but I've had him in the top 10 every week all season. I'm really happy to see Jonnu Smith going through. Some of my calls have kind of played out well. Tannehill's looked great, so as a quarterback, I've got him in the top 10 this week against a very vulnerable Viking secondary. I have him ahead of Deshaun Watson against the really tough Steelers defense, so Tannehill offers that same athleticism that Watson can. Yes, Watson's a better quarterback than Ryan Tannehill, you know, real life football, but this is fantasy, and I'm not crazy about the matchup with Watson not knowing the health of Will Fuller. Again, really tough Steelers defense, so give me Ryan Tannehill with the Vikings. That might be, I'm just kind of looking through here to see, you know, what would someone look at my rankings and say, oh, wow, why is that decision made? I have Davante Adams at 12 and Julio Jones at 13. Both are kind of dealing with injuries. I feel like if I knew they were healthier, they'd probably move up. And if we know that they're, you know, if it's really coming down to questionable game time, they're probably both going down the rankings, if not off entirely. Not off entirely. They'll still be in my top 40, even if they're hobbled going into a game, just because I feel like Adams and Julio are not at 100%, could still perform. But I guess one thing I was surprised with was some of the players I put immediately ahead of Adams. I have him at 12, like I said. Terry McLaurin at 11, Keenan Allen at 10. McLaurin's been producing. Keenan Allen, not so much, although it's all the matchup. The Panthers, if Herbert's playing, I do like Tyrod Taylor, but I think at this point, better quarterback play, so like seeing that. I have Edelman at 9 after a monster performance. Juju, not so great week last week, but I do like him against the Texans defense. If I knew Adams was fully healthy, even against Marshawn Lattimore, it's a tough coverage matchup, but I'd probably move him right there to number 8, but we'll see. Just to monitor throughout the week with those two in particular, Adams and Julio. Running back-wise, maybe surprising, Miles Sanders at 5, Jonathan Taylor at 6. Bengals and Jets, respectively. Miles Sanders at 5, I can't put him any lower. It's the Bengals are so vulnerable on the ground, and yes, the Eagles' offensive line has not been great, but it's such an exploitable matchup. I think, for his ability to pass to catch passes as well as run the football well and be the goal line back, the red zone weapon, I think Sanders is going to have a big week. So Sanders at 5, Jonathan Taylor at 6. Yes, Alessandro, the Jets' interior defensive line is great. We know that. But what we saw last week, if you got a good offensive line and you can get to the outside on them, it's very vulnerable. And Raheem Mostert's fast. Good athlete. But this is Jonathan Taylor we're talking. This is a whole other level of athlete over what Raheem Mostert did last week. Had that big, what I think it was an 80-yard touchdown run, and he ended up with negative yards the rest of the game after that. So, whatever. Mostert, but you know, which could happen to Taylor. He could break off a big run and that's it, not get any other ground. But he's becoming the pass catching back. Not that that role might be used too often against the Jets. I believe it's the biggest point spread, a 10 points for the Colts. So heavy favored matchup here. And I was thinking about, you know, the next couple of running backs. You got Dalvin Cook at 7, Aaron Jones at 8. Titans, Saints, they're both tough run matchups. I think, especially if Adams is out, Jones is probably going to see a ton of targets. Regardless, Cook's probably going to see a lot of passes thrown his way as well. Still the goal line back in both cases. So, but I have Taylor ahead. I think Taylor's going to do better this week than them. I even have him ahead of the other rookie, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, still in my top 12 at 11. But Ravens' defense is pretty tough. So I think... Edwards-Helaire might be in for a tough game. He could also potentially, if he catches passes, and he hasn't really been doing that yet this year, but if he does get that third down, or they use him more, and you know, maybe this might be the game. I suppose they went to overtime last week, so that was a game that certainly challenged them in the Chargers, but the Ravens are certainly a team that could put up a ton of points on the Chiefs, potentially. So if that's the case, maybe Edwards-Helaire gets more run on third downs and starts catching passes. Maybe that's the only place to exploit Baltimore, since the corners are so great and the pass rush is so good that Mahomes may just have to dump off in order to avoid sacks. So if that's the case, maybe Edwards-Helaire actually should get boosted up, but I don't know. I have Nick Chubb at 10. I'm not crazy about that matchup against Washington. And I mean, Edwards-Helaire is a much better offensive line. Maybe I could talk myself into moving Edwards-Helaire up one spot ahead of Chubb. Chris Carson against Dallas. That should be a lot of points. So, no, I don't think I think Helaire maybe cracks the top 10, but not for me, just not quite this week, not against the Ravens. We'll see. I mean, and there's some good matchups too, just below him, like Austin Ekeler at 13 against the Panthers, again, super vulnerable. Kenyon Drake against the Lions, who we have seen over the last couple weeks, very vulnerable on the ground. Jerick McKinnon at 16, because it seems like he's going to be the lead back for the Giants. David Montgomery at 15 for the Falcons, because he's kind of taking over that role as a pass catcher as well. You know, both him and Cohen are capable of that. James Robinson at 18 against the Dolphins. So, you know, he's ahead of some players in good matchups, but I think Edwards-Helaire, talent-wise and projected volume-wise, kind of fits in well there. So if you want to look at the rest of my rankings, just to take a look at that, I guess... funny that tight end actually is the same top three as last week. Travis Kelce, Mark Andrews, Darren Waller in that exact same order. Though Andrews did not have a good week last week. I feel like against the Chiefs, that might be a different story. That's going to be, as much as, you know, that's a tough cover matchup with Tyrann Mathieu, I still think Andrews is going to see the volume in a game where they should be needing to, you know, score points and keep up. A few other things I wanted to talk about. One was just players that are seemingly available. So I'm looking at, I'm going to use Yahoo as a reference. I want to look at players that are owned in less than half of leagues. And, you know, maybe a couple surprising names here. One's Corey Davis, who's done fairly well this year. Really good, really explosive week one. Unfortunately, not sure how many people played him. Only 3 catches last week against Jacksonville, but did catch a touchdown. So, you know, has maintained double-digit point value. Again, depending on scoring settings, of course, but he's maintained that over the last couple weeks, so... I guess technically if it's non-PPR, Davis would have only had 9.6 points. So it wouldn't be double digits. So it is scoring dependent. Another player that I know Kayla is going to want me to mention is Russell Gage. Yahoo's only appearing in 39% of rosters. And, you know, again, not sure about Julio Jones' question, you know, health-wise, you know, kind of a question mark. Regardless, it seems like Russell Gage at the very least is the number 3 there. I know Hayden Hurst got more work last week when Julio was out, but Gage, not 12 targets, then 9 targets in 2 straight weeks, not double digit both weeks, but still very productive. So yeah, I really like Russell Gage, and then 39% of leagues. That's probably better, almost better than Corey Davis. You've got Marquez Valdes-Scantling in only 37% of leagues. It's funny that even though technically he scored more points than Lazard, Lazard is in more leagues, 46%, so closer to half. Still, though, I think both can be valuable assets. It's all about exploiting the best weeks, the best matchups. I did feel as though the Lions possessed a better pass rush than the Vikings, so the Packers may purposely have just ran the football more to avoid that. Could be the same case against the Saints, but the truth is that the Saints offense... better than the Vikings and Lions, I think. I don't think that's a stretch, as much as I love to criticize Drew Brees. So I expect the Packers are going to have to throw more. This is not going to be a game where they're... I mean, they could rely on Aaron Jones as a receiver, maybe, but I still think Alan Lazard... The problem here is if Adams doesn't play, what makes it that Lazard and Valdescaling won't be good plays is the corners will have to face. I mean, just because of his ability as a deep threat, I almost wonder if Valdescaling actually draws Marshawn Lattimore, which would, I think, be great for Lazard. I think, you know, Janoris Jenkins is good, but it's better than Lattimore. It almost, I think, you know, if Adams is out and that's the case, it makes Lazard a must play, I think, because he's going to see the volume. Rodgers is probably going to go his way more than, you know, Valdescaling if he's covered by Lattimore. Now, if it's reversed, and I don't know, the truth is, it's really tough to play either, especially late, not knowing about Adams, not knowing who's the matchup. But you look ahead to next week, it's the Falcons. I think all three could produce pretty well. That's a very vulnerable secondary. It could also be a heavy Aaron Jones game again, but just take on the risk. I think both will produce throughout the season. I'm looking at N'Keal Harry's in 36% of leagues. He emerged 12 targets last week. It seems like Cam Newton's really starting to look towards him. I remember seeing the targets, you know, look at, you know, where the targets were for the Patriots last week. And Cam's been consistent throughout his career. He'll funnel it to a very small group of players who will all get a bunch of targets, which I think works out great for N'Keal Harry and Julian Edelman, who both should be peppered. So 36% rostership for N'Keal Harry does seem a little low to me. Brandon Ayuk in only 31% of leagues. I guess he's a rookie. Only two catches in his NFL debut. He's going to have Nick Mullins this week, but it's against the very vulnerable Giants secondary. The Eagles secondary outside of Darius Slay is really vulnerable. The Dolphins secondary. So that's three great matchups coming up. So Ayuk's probably going to get, you know, if he's available in this many leagues, it's probably going to start going up. So I think Ayuk in only 31%. That's probably something that will see a correction eventually. Going further down, I will say Keelan Cole and Laviska Shenault. This is where we get, you know, we're under 25% rostership here. Keelan Cole's available, is in Yahoo leagues rostered in 24%, Laviska Shenault in 20%. Minshew's looking to be a really good quarterback, and I think especially pick them up if you need a receiver to start this week, because both are playing they're obviously on the same team, they're both playing the same opponent, but both are, I think, really good starts against the Dolphins this week. Shenault in two games has already received 7 rushing attempts as well as 8 targets, so they're clearly giving him opportunity. And Keelan Cole, I mean, he's got 12 targets, so, you know, that's looking good too. 11 catches for 12, that's a really good catch rate. And, you know, Minshew hasn't necessarily been throwing it that much, a little more last week because they were up against the Titans were up and they needed to try and make a game out of it. And maybe this is a week where James Robinson's actually the guy and they just run all over them. But, you know, early on, look for Minshew to throw some passes. And I think, obviously, DJ Chark's in a great week. Just to go back to my rankings, I have Chark at wide receiver 4. Again, consequence of Adams and Julio being hurt. And the not so great matchup that Ridley has against the Bears. You know, you make your argument that Ridley should be in the top 4. But I am at 6, so it's not like I have him that low. Mike Evans at 5. I think I would take, you know, both receivers are really great and talented, but I just love Chark's matchup against the Dolphins. And now that we're hearing that Byron Jones is going to be out for this game, that frees things up for Chark even more. So, yeah, full go on Chark. Definitely a must start this week. I believe, you know, I'm thinking of my leagues where I have Chark in. He was drafted early enough that he was an every week starter anyway. You know, usually my first 5-6 rounds, he was probably a 5th round pick. So Chark, you know, he's a first five. You know, if I'm picking him in the first 5 rounds, I'm expecting him to start every week. So I'm not going to bench Chark in most weeks unless it's an absolutely atrocious, horrible matchup. But this is definitely a must play. Just looking at some more, and if you look at single quarterback. Obviously, a lot of quarterbacks are pretty low, so it's tough to really say go out and get them because, you know, the elite, you know, you really shouldn't be, if you've got an elite quarterback and the matchup's not great, you're definitely not dropping them. I could understand streaming if you had enough bench spots, but, you know, for the elite, like Deshaun Watson's probably probably the only example I can think of this week, with against the Steelers. I'm looking at some of these quarterbacks that are available. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater against the Chargers, I mean, that's a tough pass rush too, so no thank you. Derek Carr against the Patriots, that's a tough secondary. I mean, he did look decent against a Saints secondary last week through 3 touchdowns. But I feel, I don't know. I think I'd rather just start Watson than either of those two. They are available, though, for anyone who is looking for to chase really good matchups. Available in less than 20% of Yahoo leagues. I'm trying to see other quarterbacks here who could be available that you'd maybe consider. I see Trubisky is available in a lot of leagues. Just because he's playing the Falcons, that might be one where I could maybe understand Trubisky over Watson. I still don't have him ranked that way. I don't think I would do it, but I can get behind that more than the other ones I mentioned. I mean, I've got Watson 11 and Trubisky at 14, so they're not separated by that much. Really, and I mean, I could flip-flop Trubisky 14 or 15 with Tom Brady. Even Breeze at 16 against the Packers. Like, Ben at 17 against the Texans. So I could see Trubisky anywhere in that range. So I would still rather play Watson. But that's where it starts to get close, I think. I mean, I see Sam Darnold available in 10% of leagues. No, thanks. I'm not. Rather play Watson, right? So if you've got questionable starters you're not really sure about, then it makes sense. But for, again, I'll say a guy like Watson because I think he and Mahomes, for the elite quarterbacks, probably have the worst matchups. Maybe you could argue Josh Allen against the Rams. There's no way I'm starting Trubisky over any of those guys. So just kind of a reference point there. As for tight ends, I mean, my advice is you should have already drafted Jonnu Smith, right? So now you don't have to worry about tight end. But if I would suppose that if you are looking to the waiver wire for a tight end, what you probably want more is a streamer with a really good matchup more than someone you think is going to be a long-term answer. Just trying to see who are the tight ends that seem to be available in most leagues. I mean, yeah, Kyle Rudolph, 7% of leagues, no thanks. Mo Alley Cox is available in 6% of Yahoo leagues. That might be the one. If you need a streaming tight end, it seems like he's available in a lot of leagues. Drew Sample right now is leading the Bengals in red zone opportunities, tied with Joe Mixon. He had 4 red zone targets last week. So, Drew Sample might be a decent streaming option. I'm trying to see other tight ends that are really low. Tyler Eifert for the Jags against Miami. That's, again, start any Jaguars pass catcher. So if you need a streamer, Tyler Eifert or Mo Alley Cox are probably the two I would look towards. I see Ian Thomas available in 11% of leagues. No thanks. I mean, 2 targets in the year in 2 games. I want tight ends that are getting targets. So definitely no to Ian Thomas. Sorry, Marcus, our Chargers managing editor. I know he's a big Ian Thomas fan, but not quite working out there. Jordan Reed. Yeah, against the Giants, actually. Yeah, Jordan Reed's another one, a streamer available. He's rostered in only 13% of Yahoo leagues. Dalton Schultz did catch the touchdown, and the Seahawks should turn into a shootout, 16%. I like that, but I don't like him as much as the other three that I already named. Reed, Mo Alley Cox, and Tyler Eifert. I'd prefer all of them over Dalton Schultz, but he's not a horrible pick for a streaming tight end this week. And I suppose what you're looking for on the waiver wire and as free agents really depends on what you need them for. Because if you are, if you have dealt with injuries and you really are looking for a starter this week, then the only thing you're looking at is this week's matchup. But if you're trying to pick up depth as a long-term option, then you really will look to, okay, who do I think long-term will have the best opportunity, specifically from running backs, or who do I think has the best quarterback situation as a wide receiver that will allow that receiver to hit their ceiling. And so I think, yeah, from waiver wire pickups, especially free agent additions in fantasy football leagues, I think the key for receivers probably is ceiling more than anything. I know I've been, talk about in drafts and tier drafting, I do kind of put an emphasis in point per reception leagues or even half point per reception leagues on the slot receivers that are going to garner volume but not necessarily hit high weekly upside every week. But that's because those are the starters that I want kind of in my lineup. I want, like I said, at a certain point I draw the line when the offense is so bad, like a Jets with Jamison Crowder. I think I've got Crowder on 1 out of 17 rosters. So clearly not someone I was targeting this year. That's where I drew the line on slot receivers. But a guy like Edelman, I was, all over that. Cooper Kupp not working out so far, but I'm hoping starting week 5 he has a really good uptick to the season and just kind of takes off, but first month be slow. It seems like that's what it is right now. And you know, I have RSO League with an extension due on Cup this year, or potential. I mean, I'll have to see what the extension values are, and those come out after week four. So, and you know, there's a lot of factors that go into those algorithms. Kyle English, a genius with how he set that whole thing up with extensions, but takes in player production, price, compares to, you know, league salaries and things like that. So part of me is hoping that if Cup has poor performances over the next 2 weeks, it keeps that extension number down. But again, I'm very biased and cheering greedily for things like this. So that's just me. And my cohorts aren't here to stop me. So ha ha ha. But seriously though, but I think from the wide receivers that you're picking up as free agents, you really are looking for upside only. Because at this point, I don't know that there's much safety and security in any of these, in any of these plays. Kendrick Bourne is only rostered in 6% of Yahoo leagues. That's ridiculous. I had to jump right back into this because I thought we were done with the receiver. I was getting to a certain point when we're okay below 10%. There's probably not much more, but 6% for Kendrick Bourne. To be honest, he is one of my most rostered wide receivers. I think I had as many shares of Kendrick Bourne as I did Odell Beckham and Marquez Valdes-Scantling. Maybe some Packers bias there, but not really. I mean, he's been producing, so it's been a good thing. And it's funny because Bourne has been known to catch touchdowns. He hasn't yet, but, you know, got 100 yards so far through two games. So the fact that he was able to score double-digit points last week without scoring a touchdown, that's a good sign. And, you know, and I mentioned Brandon Ayuk in 30, you know, only on 31% of rosters. Right now, I'd rather have Kendrick Bourne. Late in the season, as Ayuk gets up to speed in the NFL, sure, he's going to be better. But for now, Kendrick Bourne's the much better play. So ignore what I was saying about Brandon Ayuk. Go pick up Kendrick Bourne, people. Especially if you're on Yahoo. I don't know about other sites, if that's just a Yahoo thing where people didn't like Kendrick Bourne. But, man, that one's criminal. And Bourne does provide that upside. Like, and especially now as a kind of an outside number one threat. Really bad secondary against the Giants. According to the scoring settings I have for this league, they've allowed the ninth most fantasy points to the receiver position. I'm surprised it's even that low, to be honest. I know Bradbury's decent and Logan Ryan as a safety is a great addition, but he's so new to the team, I feel like as he's going to be better as the year goes on. But really, it's tough to not see a path through success for Kendrick Bourne this week specifically, but in the next few weeks with all these injuries, Deebo Samuel kind of working his way back in. So so now that I've done my triad, actually, my co-host Alessandro is going to join. So hang tight after this break, and we'll have at least one of my co-hosts on. Welcome, Alessandro, to the podcast. How are you doing?
Doing all right, Kyle. Just doing all right.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, all things considered, I think we're doing pretty good. Obviously, a lot of injuries in fantasy football, but unfortunately, that wasn't the worst thing that happened in fantasy football this weekend. Unfortunately, we lost one of our own in the community, James the Brain Catullus, who has been a guest on the show before. I know I've played in leagues with him, been in leagues he's commissioned before. Aside from all that, every indication I've gotten from anyone who's ever spoken about him and every interaction I've had with him, just an amazing human being. So, you know, a loss for the whole world, but specifically for us in the fantasy community.
I don't know what to say, man. It's hard. I mean, I only learned about his passing from Stompy, which is one of the guys, and I actually got a chance to do a couple of podcasts, go on his podcast, and he come on ours, and I don't know, man. It's kind of sucked, to be honest with you. Like, it hit hard, because, like, I don't know the guy as well as the other guys, but, like, he's such an incredible person. And when you talk to him, he makes you inviting and makes you feel good. And he's so knowledgeable. It's terrible, man.
Yeah, they were generous enough to bring us on the Superflex Super Show, you and I. So that was great of them. And yeah, and for anyone who is looking to help support the Catullus family in this tough time, John Hogue from the Superflex Super Show, his pinned tweet on Twitter, at SuperflexDude, that is... He has a pinned tweet there explaining the fund set up for the Catullus family, so you can donate there through just following that link that John set up. So no pressure, but anyone who feels the need to donate, that's how you can go about doing that. Thank you for letting us talk about that. Obviously, it means a lot to both Alessandro and I. James meant a lot to us, so again, thank you for letting us talk about that. But now we're on to fantasy football. I think almost as James would want, you know, as a fantasy football enthusiast, he would want us to continue, you know, this great sport that connects us all. So, Alessandro, week three rankings. You don't have Kayla here, so you get to control everything. I almost regret this. But you get to make all the criticisms. So, what do you think of my week three rankings, which are available on Full Press Coverage and the Full Press Coverage app?
Okay, so having taken a look at your rankings and reading the injury reports that have come out recently, I do want to make a few adjustments, obviously. With CMC going down on the IR, I honestly can't tell you who is going to be the backup in Carolina. I think it's Mike Davis.
Out of everyone they have in that backfield, he's had the most NFL experience, and he was the guy on the field for them last time. He was the main backup behind McCaffrey so far this year. It wasn't Jordan Scarlett like we had originally anticipated. So, truthfully, it might not be that productive, because Curtis Samuel might actually end up being the guy, because he's struggled so much, they may just say, you know what, let's have him carry the football. Let's get the ball in his hands that way. So,
well, he does a lot of jet sweeps and out routes, so I mean,
if Matt Rule's smart, I'm thinking about this too. You run him on a jet sweep, and then a couple plays later, you fake the jet sweep, and then he cuts through the middle, and you have the offensive line block forward that probably catches the defense off guard. Like, that could be a weapon for them. So I still think Mike Davis is the best option there. He'll probably be the goal line back at the very least, which is maybe what you want here, is who's got the chance at touchdowns. But because personally, I'd rather have Mike Davis, even though McCaffrey is obviously not going to be out as long as Saquon Barkley, who's done for the year, unfortunately. I'd rather have him than any of the Giants backs, because that's probably a bigger split on an offensive line that has been atrocious this year. I mean, I know we expected the Panthers line to not be so good. I mean, they may have the best tackle play they've ever had in their career, but the guard play really isn't great, which doesn't help running backs. But I just have a hard time investing in any of those Giants running backs. I'd rather go with Mike Davis, at least get a few weeks of maybe some solid production, maybe get some touchdowns with him. If you can, even if you can sell high in dynasty leagues for any pick, really, or in redraft to get any position you need, I think that's probably the better option. Would you agree there?
It is. And, you know, with the Giants playing the 49ers and the 49ers losing everybody to the Jets earlier this week, which they have that NFL Inspector come and check out the stadium. That front seven's taking a hurting. It's still very good, and we don't know how Freeman's going to interact with the Giants, but that front seven's still really good. So I think that Mike Davis or Curtis Samuel, if we're lucky, against the Chargers and their front line is actually a better play in this opinion.
Yeah, I think I would definitely agree there. I do have Dion Lewis at 39. I don't have Mike Davis ranked, but part of me thinks they're going to be down against the 49ers. They need the pass-catching back. He's got experience. Like, if there's any week to play Dion Lewis, it's probably this week. But as soon as Freeman gets acclimated, his value's sapped, because Freeman's a pretty good pass-catcher himself. So he can come out there and replace Lewis as the pass-catching guy, and I think he's the better goal line back between him, you know, certainly between him and Lewis, but also between Freeman and Wayne Gallman, as much as Freeman, a bit older, has dealt with injuries. I still think that's a role that he can excel at. But so I've got Lewis is better than Mike Davis this week, but I would rather have Davis, because I think he's going to give you more weeks of production.
Oh, yeah. And I fully agree with that. So with all that being said, I would take Mike Davis and put him over Tony Pollard, which you have ranked at RB 40, just because you're going to get some production out of him. And I think you're going to get more production out of Mike Davis than Tony Pollard. But I don't think that he's going to get anything higher than that. But I do want him a little represented. As for the others, I would actually put Joshua Kelly a little bit higher. He's actually been really good, and he's been showing out, and he's been getting a lot more touches. And he's actually taken over, I would say, in my opinion, Justin Jackson's role, since Justin Jackson's out. And he's been showing that he's a really good pick. I'll put him a little bit closer towards James Robinson, who you have at 18, so you move Kelly from 24 to 18.
I will agree with you that I think he probably should be higher, and barring injuries, I think definitely will be higher, because there's one person who I have in that range that's probably going much lower.
Who you got that's going lower?
Well, it's Malcolm Brown, right? Because, I mean, if he doesn't play, obviously he's off the list, but, you know, even 20 seems high for Brown right now, because it's a tough matchup against the Bills, and he's not 100% healthy. So, honestly, I think I might just swish them. Kelly at 20 and Brown at 24. Kelly jumps over Leonard Fournette, Gurley, and David Johnson, who are all in really tough matchups. So because he's playing the Panthers and they've been so vulnerable. I would say the Buccaneers should be a tough matchup on defense, but for running backs, but they haven't been. So I don't think I can put him ahead of Melvin Gordon, who is, you know, without Lindsay is the clear workhorse there. But I think Kelly right there at 20 probably makes sense, actually.
I was actually going to say that he should jump Melvin Gordon too, but without Lindsay, then yeah, I can't justify that. So I actually would switch them and put him at 20. So he moves up four spots, give him a little credit. And then in that regard, I will move Austin Eckler up because he is the main back and he's a dual threat. I would move him just behind Nick Chubb, ahead of Clyde Edwards-Helaire and James Conner. Just two spots, nothing huge, because the Houston defense against James Conner, while it is statistically a good matchup and with Benny Snell going down, I don't see that going very far just because of how we saw Benny Snell getting more production than James Conner coming in, but now with Benny Snell down.
Well, I mean, that was, you know, that was tough. That's tough to say. I mean, he out week one, yes, but James Conner barely played, so obviously Snell got way more carries. But we saw when Conner was healthy last week, Snell didn't see the field barely. So, oh, Snell was hurt, but I mean, but the other thing too, Snell didn't see the field before Conner got hurt. Like as long as Conner's there, he's the workhorse. That's why I don't know. I've put Eckler as high as I can because of the good matchup against the Panthers, but to me, Conner and Edwards-Helaire, you know, if anything, I was thinking maybe Edwards-Helaire was too low, not too high. Maybe I could justify putting him ahead of Nick Chubb. So I don't know that I could put Eckler higher than 13, especially with Josh Kelly being seemingly the goal line back. That was one thing I thought Eckler could still retain, was the goal line duties and get some touchdown upside. But truthfully, I mean, he doesn't have that role. It's Joshua Kelly's now, so tough to put him as an RB1. So I think 13, well-placed. I mean, even ahead of Kenny and Drake, like I could flip-flop those two endlessly just because the Lions are clearly a good matchup against running backs.
That's true. It's just the Ravens. I mean, they're the sixth best running because they only allowed less than 200 yards through these 2 weeks versus everyone else that's getting blown out of the water. I mean, the Lions allowed over 400 over these past 2 weeks. So it's a little... I don't know. Clyde Edwards is a little bit of a mix for me because he's got the pass-catching ability. He's explosive, but the Ravens are a good D. And the front line is really good. And with the Ravens' secondary hurting, I feel like Lee Mahomes will pass more than run. I don't know. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is the one that I can't figure out. I mean, he definitely needs to be in the up. I just don't know how far up or...
You know what? I could maybe say maybe Connor ahead of him, just because the Texans have kind of been a vulnerable spot on the ground.
They're the second worst in the league right now.
So, yeah, maybe, you know what? Maybe Connor in the top 10 ahead of Edwards-Helaire and Chubb, who's going against Washington, which has a great a defensive line, and against the Browns, not so good offensive line. So, if anything, it might be Connor the guy I need to move up.
Yeah, I was completely shocked seeing Washington only giving up 217. So, yeah, actually, you know what? Yeah, let's go with that. Connor ahead, Chubb, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. In that regard, if we're doing that, then we need to drop Kareem Hunt just a little bit.
Well, part of me thinks that he's actually, I almost wonder if he's better play than Chubb this week, because he's as the pass catcher against a really intense defensive line, Baker may be dumping off to him often. So, actually, to be honest, I think I originally had him at like 13, 14, but then obviously moved Eckler and Drake and Montgomery. And as we found out, okay, Coleman and Mostert out, I moved McKinnon up into the top 16 as well. So I did have Hunt actually higher, and I have lowered him a little. You know, you could get me on lowering him below James Robinson, Melvin Gordon, maybe. I don't know if I'd go as far as Joshua Kelly. Ooh, that's tough.
Well, but if we're going to move Kelly at 20.
I could see Robinson ahead of Hunt, and I don't know if I could go much lower on Kareem Hunt. I think 17, 18 is probably about as far low as I'm willing to go. If anyone, I'd lower Chubb from 10, maybe down to 12, 13.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And then I want you, that last one here, your reasoning behind Miles Sanders being so high. I have to ask. I understand that the Cincinnati Bengals are the third worst. I'm just wondering, do you think that he's going to get that many yardage, or do you think that he's going to get passes? What's Like, because I see him as a top 10 play for sure. I just didn't think he'd be top 5.
It's the matchup. You said, and I did already mention this to the listeners, so but I will, we can go into details about it. I didn't really talk about it too much because I basically just said that run, that defense is not great. With injuries to the receivers, I also see Sanders getting a lot of targets as well. I mean, what was he third on the team in targets last year? So it's him as a pass catcher is not a foreign concept. As a rookie, he did it. So I think as a second year guy, he certainly could. Missed week one, came back last week. He got all the work. He got all the red zone carries, all the goal line carries. So he's the goal line back for them. So there's touchdown upside there, especially this week, and pass catching upside. If you notice my tight end rankings, I have both Goddard and Ertz in the top 5 as Sanders. I think all three of them are going to feast this week.
As much as I want to say Jonathan Taylor should be that high, my defense has really taken a hit. I mean, granted, I will say this is the only bright spot. After that 80-yard run, because they couldn't figure out it was a toss play, the next 6 drives equaled a total of 4, or excuse me, the next 6 rushes equaled a total of 4 total yards. So, but then coupled that with a 55-yard run from there, I know I understand why we got Jonathan Taylor that high. So I will say that.
I will also say they've I mean, Washington's defensive line, then a defensive line led by Aaron Donald, right? Like, the Eagles have not had good matchups. This is the Bengals. This is much easier pass rush wise. So I think that's also an edge that their offensive line is going to have a much better game. Like, that offensive line wants to prove something. I think this is a game they can go and bully the Bengals defense.
Okay.
I almost put him ahead of Derrick Henry at 4, to be honest. And if Josh Jacobs is revealed to be hurt at all, I could see Sanders in the top 3. But I think for now, 5 is where I like him. It seems like Jacobs is going to play because he came back after the injury, right? So it doesn't seem like that's serious. And, you know, the Vikings have been vulnerable on the ground. I know Eric Kendricks comes in and cleans up a lot, but every running back gets the second level. And it's basically forcing an amazing linebacker to make a great play every play. It's going to be tough to do that down in, down out against Henry. So, yeah, Sanders at 5, I think, again, for me, that's where I place well. I don't know how much you want, if you want to talk about Jonathan Taylor at 6. I already proposed your argument to the listeners, and what I anticipated was going to be your protest.
Listen, I'm trying my best to stay away from being a Jets fan, just because until Adam Gase is fired, I don't want to be associated with that organization. But it's hard. After a lifetime of the suck, you're just in it. But I will say this. After they found out what they're doing with the boot play, they stopped them. And like I said, the next 6-7 rushes, a total of another 4 yards. So it was just a combined total. That's why they're so low. The knife from the bottom.
They've also allowed a lot of touchdowns. That's the thing. Like, the touchdown numbers kind of inflate who allows the most points or not, because that could be not as sticky week to week. So I will give them that. They've allowed 3 rushing touchdowns so far. So running backs have been scoring higher than their yards would indicate because they've been finding the end zone. Which is, again, why I have faith in Taylor, though, because I think he can.
Yeah, I'm not going to touch Taylor. I think that he's good right there. Scary Terry at number 11 for you. I understand Greedy Williams and all of them are hurt, and I don't think they're going to play. I saw one of them practice, but I don't think they're going to play. Denzel Ward is still a really good corner, and I think he may be put on Scary Terry.
First off, you don't like the Scorin' McLaurin nickname? As much as I'm a Rick and Morty fan.
No.
But secondly, he torched Patrick Peterson last week, so... I'm not that afraid of Denzel Ward, to be honest. McLaurin, I mean, he's kind of been getting it done against really good corners, like, in his young career already, so I'm not afraid, no.
Okay, that's fine. Denzel Ward's a good corner to me, and I think that'd be an interesting matchup. If he could burn Patrick Peterson and, you know, Dwayne Haskins can somehow do it against Chandler Jones in his face, then I think, you know, Myles Garrett and I can't think of the other guy. He's got some long name. Be on the edge rush for Cleveland will be no problem then. So, point proven. I was wrong.
One thing I will say, if I knew Adams was 100% healthy, even though he's got a tough corner matchup against Lattimore, he'd be higher. Like, he'd probably be number 8. Number 7, maybe. Like, so that part of it is the uncertainty with Adams is why he's so low. He's at 12.
The next one I want to talk about is the Dallas-Seattle wide receivers. I see you got Amari Cooper here at 15. I'm not going to touch DK because that man's a beast, but I see you got Amari Cooper here at 15. And then I see you got CeeDee Lamb at 26, but no Michael Gallup.
Well, I was right that Amari Cooper isn't the number one wide receiver on the Cowboys. Problem is, I identified the wrong other guy. It's not Gallup. I mean, Lamb's doubled Gallup up in targets through 2 weeks. Like, he's at the very least clearly the number two there. Cooper didn't have a great week last week. I think, you know, this is a better, well, I mean, it was the Falcons. It was a good corner matchup last week.
This is a lot better, considering they have allowed the most passing yards, 831 yards. Granted, the Falcons are right behind them, but they've allowed almost 90 more yards to wide receivers. So this is a lot better matchup. You better tell Jamal Adams to shut his ass up.
I could see Gallup coming in at 39-40. Like, I've got T.Y. Hilton at 39 and Anthony Miller at 40. Like, I could probably, honestly, just considering this matchup, I probably would rather start Gallup than Miller, certainly. So that's maybe something that has to change. Even though, again, Falcons secondary vulnerable, but a zero burger does leave a really sour taste in your mouth. So Miller not being hurt and just playing and getting nothing, like which he's done before. So maybe expect the bounce back on Miller there. So I don't know. Tough than those last few.
Well, I mean, I would at least very minimal move up CD. Devontae Parker, I actually would move both those up because he has a better matchup against Jacksonville. So I would definitely put Devontae Parker and CD in that exact order, but I would move them, honestly, to the 21 and 22 spot. So Devontae would be 21, CD would be 22. I would move them right there. Move John Brown to the 23rd. Just, like, tuck him right in there because John Brown does have a good matchup against the Rams, but, you know, it's still the Rams. They still got something of a front line and corners, and so I think Josh Allen will actually eat a lot more and he'll do more scrambles because he's being chased by Aaron Donald. Deontay Johnson against Houston. Yeah, granted, Pittsburgh offensive line is good, but J.J. Watt is looking to return to form. He is actually looking a lot better. They have some edge rushers there now. They are doing something. They're actually building on that defense, but the secondary is still weak, so I don't know if Big Ben can get the ball out in time. So I think there's going to be a lot more dump-offs and short routes, and I think Juju actually be the best reception of it. So I don't think Deontay's there. Darius Slayton against San Fran, like I said, they got a good front line, and they're going to throw the ball more, but that front line can still apply pressure against Daniel Jones.
Can they, though? Well, I guess, yeah, against this offensive line, anyone can apply pressure, but no Nick Bosa.
No Nick Bosa, no Solomon Thomas, but they got Javon Kinlaw, and they got Frank Greenlaw, so those are still two very good pressure appliers.
Yeah, but your three best pass rushers from last year aren't going to be playing for you right now. But Nick Bosa out for the year is, I would argue, maybe like from a football perspective, probably that's the most devastating injury we saw this week, because it's not like the Panthers or Giants were going to win anyway. So losing their running backs isn't like, it's not, that's not shifting the balance of power in the NFL. But I mean, could the 49ers finish fourth in their own division? I think that's possible. I don't think they're winning their division.
No, I mean, with the way the Cards are playing right now, no, they're probably going to end Seahawks. Fourth. Well, that'd be true. Okay.
My preseason Super Bowl pick, by the way. So, you know, looking so far, so okay. I guess I predicted that they would let Russ cook. But truthfully, I don't know that I could raise Parker or Lamb higher than maybe just ahead of Marquise Brown, because I do really like Slayton. You know, no Sterling Shepard. He's probably going to get peppered with targets. And yes, the 49ers have had some really good corners, but they're all hurt now. Like, Sherman's out. So Slayton getting zipped with good matchups. I really like Deontay Johnson against Houston. John Brown is an X factor at 21 because it all depends on how the Rams approach it corner-wise. I think after last week's blow-up game by Diggs, I'd be shocked if Jalen Ramsey isn't shadowing Diggs. That leaves Brown in some great one-on-one matchups with some lesser corners. So that's why I have Brown up here, and I still have Diggs low. Like, I'm not quite, you know, had him at 40 last week, and he made me look stupid as finishing as the number one wide receiver overall. I only have Diggs at 30 this week because, again, shadowed by a really tough corner in Jalen Ramsey. I think, you know, next week, raising Diggs up, there'll be better matchups on the horizon. But I still would rather play John Brown right now. So I don't know if I could raise Parker or Lamb up that much. I'll give you over Marquise Brown, because that is a tough matchup against the Chiefs, as much as I do expect a shootout type game, but I think that might be as high as I'm willing to go.
Alright. The last thing I hear is I don't see that many Colts wide receivers.
Yeah, T.Y. Hilton at 39. He barely made the list at 39, so. And Rivers isn't on the list. Again, it's Jonathan Taylor at 6. I think that says it all. That's where I expect this game to go. They're 10-point favorites, so this is not a game where I think that...
I thought they were 11.
Oh, it's 11 now? Last time I checked, it was 10. But yeah, it could keep going up higher. So I think, you know, the natural consequence for me of having Taylor so high is because I expect his volume is going to be massive this week, which means no passing volume really anywhere else. As much as, truthfully... Okay, my rant now. Sorry, Kayla. You're not here to defend Philip Rivers. Jacoby Brissett, before he restrained his MCL last year, played much better than Rivers has this year. So I don't see why Jacoby Brissett isn't getting the start this week, personally. And, you know, Rivers, yeah, he got the win last week, but that was all through the run game. Like, he looks washed. He looks done, like we were talking about. So I think if the Colts are serious about winning, like getting to the playoffs and winning football games, they need to go to Brissett as soon as possible, because I think he gives them a better chance. But clearly they paid Rivers for a reason. They're going to let him go through his lumps. So I have a hard time trusting even T.Y. Hilton right now. Mo Alie-Cox seems to be the only one. Rivers with tight ends, right? And Rivers dumping off to either Taylor or Hines. Those might be the only two real options, because, you know, Pittman's great. I like that he's been getting targets, but I don't trust Philip Rivers. I thought maybe behind this offensive line, there's a chance he could rejuvenate, but clearly not. I think he's done. He's washed.
I just had to ask because, you know, I've seen a lot of waiver wire targets. People are picking up Indianapolis wide receivers, Michael Pittman, T.Y. Hilton, anyone they could get their hands on, Mo Alie-Cox, you know, pass catchers, just because it's Jets and they're favoring that matchup. And lo and behold, to my surprise, mostly because, you know, they haven't had that many yardage to go through, they're in the upper half at 15. For passing yards in between the Saints and the Rams. Actually, they're tied with the Saints in total yards allowed. So, or passing yards allowed. So that's where I'm a little bit confused, because I'm like, wait a minute, I thought people would be picking them up because don't they love this type of matchup where they could just pick up people on that? But I guess you're right. It probably is being more of a run game. I just thought there'd be a lot more Indianapolis wide receivers like Pittman. Actually, biased here, but I would put Pittman over T.Y. because I like Pittman. I like to come up.
Don't hate it, to be honest. It's tough to know because all of them have not been playing well. Again, Mo Alie-Cox, the only one that's really lived up to expectations and actually performed with touches. So, any other wide receivers, or do you want to move to either quarterback or tight end now?
Let's go to tight end. Let's save the quarterback situation for the last.
It's funny because I have Mo Alie-Cox at 24. I'm actually a little surprised it was that low. I thought I had him higher, but, you know, truthfully, I could maybe see him. You know, I have Herndon at 20. I don't know. Would you rather have in that matchup Herndon or Mo Alie-Cox?
Mo Alie-Cox. Alan Gase is not using Herndon effectively, and I hate it. Okay, because last week Herndon blocked on 40% of the snaps that were happening. You can't do that with this type of tight end. Do it to Ryan Griffin. Do it to Trayvon Wesco. Do it to Daniel Brown. Don't do it to Griffin. Well, I mean, don't do it to Griffin. But don't do it to Herndon. Do it to Griffin, Wesco, or whoever. Just don't do it to Herndon. But he did to Herndon. And the few times that Herndon was actually targeted, he dropped one because it was an off-foot throw. And then the other one was a pass of like 12 yards or something like that. I can't tell you, but whatchamacallit, Herndon's not being used effectively, so I don't think people should really play him because he's really not going to be used. It sucks. I hate to say it, but it's the truth. I mean, until they fire Gase and figure things out. Herndon got 4 targets, actually caught one of them for 5 yards. That's the total.
And he had, what, 7 week 1? So it seemed like things were pointing in a good direction for him. But yeah, that's not a great usage.
No, it's not. And you being on the O-line to protect Sam more times than not, it's not going to be good for you. So I actually would swap the two or drop Herndon altogether, because I don't think Herndon's going to do anything this week. I love to be wrong on this, but I don't think Herndon's going to do anything.
Well, and I mean, so I've got Tyler Eifert at 22, Mo Alie-Cox at 24. I could see them both being in the top 20. So maybe I think that's in order. Raise those two up, probably ahead of, certainly ahead of Herndon, probably ahead of Jordan Akins as well. So I think that might be the switch there, is just raising those two and moving some guys down. So I think there's mostly shifting at the bottom, because I am looking at, I do like my tight end rankings, I think. Like, throughout most of it. I think it's just, it got, you know, kind of gets tricky when you get to the bottom 16.
Bottom 15. That's where it gets a little muddled for me. I mean, okay, you have Goddard and Ertz side by side. What's the thinking there?
Rieger's hurt, and the wide receivers have not been performing. Again, I expect the top three targets on the Eagles to be Goddard, Ertz, and Sanders in whatever order. And I mean, I have Goddard ahead of Ertz finally, so I do kind of think Goddard's... I mean, he's out-targeted Ertz and out-produced in both games. At a certain point, he's followed the targets, so... But I could see this being a matchup where Wentz needs to kind of rebound, and I think they'll both be well, because who are the receivers there? I think it's looking like it was last year. It's going to be all the tight ends and Miles Sanders and nothing else. So I'm not willing to drop Ertz lower than that, right? Because part of me, I felt Goddard had to be in the top five, and I'm looking at who's here. I mean, if George Kittle was here, yeah, I could move Ertz out of the top five. But with no Kittle, as much as I'd love to put Jonnu Smith in the top five, I still think Ertz is in line for a ton of targets this week and a great matchup against the Bengals.
Okay. I mean, you're right, because I saw that report about Rieger. I just thought that they go with, like, Greg Ward or something you have there. But you're right. Two tight ends set. They love to run it. And so the only other person I have for your tight end list is Jordan Reed. Against the Giants, is there any possibility of moving him up? Because he actually has bounced back, and it's phenomenal. And I think people need to take advantage of it before he eventually gets another concussion and has to end his career, because God knows that man's had so many, and I feel for him so much.
I've got Evan Engram two spots ahead at 11. That's maybe the worst matchup of the players directly ahead of him. And even then, Sterling Shepard just got put on IR. Golden Tate's been slow to come around. I do think Engram is going to get targets against this 49ers team. So, and I like Hunter Henry's matchup against the Bengals as well, so I don't think I could put him ahead of those two. And then Hawkinson against the Cardinals, love that matchup. Gesicki against the Jags, love that matchup. Higbee against the Bills, you know, you'd think, oh, Bills, tough matchup, but look what Gesicki did to them last week. It seems like tight end's the one spot they're most vulnerable, so I like McVay to design Higbee some stuff. And then, you know, Jonnu Smith at 7. There's no way I'm lowering Jonnu Smith. I even said it, 7 might even be too low. So, yeah, I don't think I can move Reed up.
He has a really good matchup, and that's why I was wondering if you were willing to pull me higher. But I understand. I mean, he's still going to do very well.
I think a lot of the tight ends we expect to do well all have really good matchups this week, to be honest. I think that's what it is. In other weeks, with him having this good a matchup, he probably would crack the top 10. But it's just, like I mentioned, you know, you look at the next 5-6 guys ahead of him, they all have great matchups. So I can't raise them there, I don't think. Especially, you know, as much as Nick Mullins is good, he's playing with a backup quarterback, unlike everyone else. So... Although, I mean, you could say Miami, Gesicki's playing with the less talented quarterback that's on the roster, but...
Sorry, Kale, but I can only imagine what Tua and Gesicki will do if you go up or down, and that's a scary thought.
I definitely am on the side of, I think Gesicki gets a better chance with Tua, just because we've seen Fitzpatrick be so willing to throw to the outside perimeter so much, although, you know, was willing to, you know, when the matchup called for it, he was obviously willing to do it against the Bills, but I just think... Tua probably gives him a better chance to get more consistent targets here week to week. But again, even with Fitzpatrick in, though, against the Jags, I have Gesicki at 9, so play him.
I think that's it for my tight end, if you want to get the quarterback.
Yep.
Okay, so love the top 5, because like the Titans, they all have really good matchups. A little bit sad that Allen's at 6, but like I said, they have all really good matchups, so you really can't fault it. Cam Newton is... if he wasn't doing those rushing touchdowns, I would not put him at 7, but I think that rushing touchdown upside gives him a good spot.
Just on that, I mean, 10 red zone opportunities so far. I mean, obviously that leads all quarterbacks, and there's only a handful of running backs that have more than him, and like no receiver has more targets than he has carries inside the red zone. So it seems like the Patriots are just going to keep running them until a team really can't, you know, really a team really shuts him out. So I don't think the Raiders are that team to do that either.
All right, the only one I'm actually in consensus with your list for the most part, but there's one person, you can probably guess who it is, that I have to ask. He's on this board. Do you want to take a crack at who it is?
I think you're probably referring to Trubisky.
No, not this time. A little bit farther down the list.
Are you talking Herbert? Because it seems like he's going to play. And if anything, now that it seems like he's going to play, I have him at 24.
After what the doctor did to Tyrod? Oh, yeah, he's definitely playing.
I made this list not knowing exactly, you know, it kind of still seemed like Tyrod might play this week when I did make this list. So knowing that he's definitely not, I think I'd move Herbert up. Ahead of Goff, I think. I'd probably put Herbert at 21.
I can see that, yeah.
Okay, so who is it? I obviously can't guess well.
Kirk Cousins.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He should, yeah, Herbert should definitely be ahead of Kirk Cousins now that I'm thinking about it, yeah.
Yeah, most definitely. I honestly think that Kirk Cousins is not going to do well this week. I understand that Tennessee secondary is a little bit hurting. It's not as good as it used to be. But between Jadeveon Clowney and Vic Beasley and the rest of the front seven, and the fact that I watched DeForest Buckner, yes, I understand it's two different levels of talent, but the fact that DeForest Buckner was able to go through two guys like it was butter, Clowney is not on the level of Buckner anymore, but he's still on some good level, and I think that he'll go through this O-line, and I think Cousins will be forced to throw it out to Cook or someone. And I don't think it's going to go well for him. So I think it's mostly going to be a ground pound game, and I don't think Cousins is going to get that many points, to be completely honest with you. And if anything, I would move, obviously, Herbert up to where we want to go because he needs to be on the list, but I would move everyone else up, kick Cousins off the list, and I'll put Philip Rivers at 25 because he probably is.
I'd rather have Cousins or Mayfield. That's my problem is I don't really love Cousins or Mayfield this week, but like just going through quarterbacks, like all the guys with great matchups are the established guys ahead of them, and everyone below them all have not so good matchups. So like as much as I don't like Cousins or Mayfield this week, I feel like I can't put them any lower than 24, 25. I mean, you're having a hard time. I mean, no, if I'm not trusting Darnold, there's no way.
Not under Gage. No, I wouldn't do that either.
I was already talking a bit about waiver wire quarterbacks and like talk about, okay, Deshaun Watson has a bad matchup, but at which point are you penalizing him, right? And I mentioned like, you know, if Trubisky's out there, a great match against the Falcons, I'm still not starting him over Watson. So at a certain point.
What about Daniel Jones?
You know what? Against a weakened 49ers, I could maybe see it just because, you know what? That might be the answer there. My concern though is no Barkley, no Sterling Shepard. That kind of hinders the upside.
So if you're going to put Ingram that high, then you know that Daniel Jones is going to do it. And if you put Darius Slayton, you know, not.
Yeah, that is true. There is some logic there. Although I think I do have Thielen higher than Slayton. So like three spots. So it's not that much. My thing is, though, look where I have Dalvin Cook. And that's not all rushing either against Tennessee. I think that's. That he might be forced to throw it a lot to Cook. So I could see Cook might be, you know, getting some receiving touchdowns more than rushing touchdowns. I think that's maybe where I could justify it. I'll consider, you're right, though, with Daniel Jones. That might be the call.
Because I know when I say Darnold, under Gase, he's useless. Sorry, but it's so true. I mean, he's such a good guy. And the fact that ESPN said, look what Darnold can do if you give him time and the opportunity to actually throw to Braxton Berrios cross body on a crossing route, like that was
a great throw. That looked like vintage Rodgers, the throwing across his body, but with like perfect dead to perfect dead accuracy to put the ball right in the spot. Yeah, no, that was great. I can't wait to see Darnold have an actual head coach. That would be amazing.
God, me either. I really can't use.
And whoever they and whoever they picked first overall next year.
Some guy went on the radio. He said that the Jets would go 0-16. Keep Darnold. Don't draft Trevor Lawrence. Exactly. Sell to whoever's going to have Trevor Lawrence.
Sell the move pick, back. Yeah.
Get more picks because we already have 9.
Yeah, and if there's not, unless there's like a Jadeveon Clowney type guy, like a freak athlete as a defender that you just have to pick. Like there might be that where you don't even want to risk going down to 3 because that player might go to 2, right? So, like I could see that, but we'll see. We're not draft experts. That's not the point of the show. It's fantasy. So I get Daniel Jones over Mayfield and Cousins, and I'll consider it.
Okay.
I like Fitzpatrick's matchup against the Jags. I like Wentz against the Bengals. Stafford against the Cardinals. I like that too. Like it's tough to find a bad matchup. And when you talk about bad defenses, you get to Brady and Breeze. You know, like for Breeze, I think just volume wise, it's going to be a shootout. So Herbert, I don't think I can put him in the top 20 yet. especially because, again, both running backs so high, I do kind of expect the Chargers to kind of run this out. Especially, you know, the way Lynn loves to run the football, he'll probably want to protect his quarterback in a game where they, you know, they're not playing against the greatest, you know, the defending champ and the greatest quarterback in the game where he had to throw. I think you could see them wanting to run the football. So I'm moving him up, but not, you know, only three spots. I think it's about as much as I can.
That's fine. Just had to ask.
So thank you. Thank you for, you know, some inspiration on some changes here. I think there are some that are in order, just kind of looking through. Always, again, I mentioned it to the, you know, earlier before you were on, but I do really like this process of going through my rankings with you and Kayla. I do think I get a lot out of it and kind of gain some context. So appreciate that. Love talking to you as always.
I mean, Kayla gives another perspective, and I give the injury report perspective, and I love the matchups. There is one thing, Kyle, if you allow me to rant real quick.
I mean, I did it all the first half of the episode, so go ahead.
I'm finding more and more about, and I know this is a little controversial, so I'm sorry in advance, but I'm finding more and more that women in sports are not appreciated for their takes. And I do appreciate Kayla for her takes. And while we do argue, we do fight, I think that, and I've shouted her out in multiple tweets because, you know, she needs to hear that there are people behind her, and I'm saying this now. I give her hell. She gives me hell, and we do have good takes on each other. But she does bring valuable insight that does change our minds. So, with her being a woman in this industry, that she definitely needs to be heard, and she definitely needs to be, you know, not shunned. Like I'm seeing a lot on Twitter, because y'all, I appreciate you listening to the pod, but don't do it. Appreciate all takes. And just listen to the ones you really want to listen to, but take in all the takes and appreciate them.
Well, I mean, I won't appreciate absolutely god awful horrible takes, like what Skip Bayless says most of the time, especially when it comes to people's mental health, which he has no right talking about leadership. Because, like, let's be honest, like, okay, my rants now. What does Skip Bayless know about leadership? What has he ever won or competed at? So, you know, forget that guy. That guy should be off the air. And I mean, I think you're kind of referring to Jason Whitlock, right? Another guy who I think should be off the air and has had nothing but god-awful takes about life, let alone sports. I mean, both those guys have horrible sports takes, but I'll take that but the way they talk about humans is just disgusting to me. So both of them, absolutely horrible. Get Skip Bayless and Jason Whitlock off. I don't usually like saying people's names that don't deserve to be said, but I think this is a point where, you know, it's so obvious that, you know, they just get rid of those both of them. They're fossils. The world's passed them by. There's no place for that type of misogynistic behavior. And I mean, Alessandra, yeah, you can argue with Kayla all you want. That's part of the beauty of the show is us debating sports takes. But like, and I think Kayla would echo this. Certainly, you've never questioned her credibility or you know, criticized her based on anything other than her takes and what she's bringing as information. So
the only thing I criticize her on is the fact that she's a Dolphins fan, but that's because we're AFC rivals.
That's, and I mean, I rip on Bears and Lions fans all the time. And I mean, this year I don't have to rip on Vikings fans because the team is doing that for them.
Oh, God.
Well, and to be fair, Matt Patricia's been doing it to Lions fans the last 3 years, so.
Yeah, true. But no, I just wanted to say that because, I mean, I've been seeing a lot more people ripping on women in sports, women reporters, women journalists, women in fantasy sports especially. And I'm sorry, but I have to say something, and I understand we're on a pod, and it needs to be said. It needs to be clearly spoke that they are just like us. They are good. They provide a different insight. They help us get better. And it's just stupid that we actually have to come to this and say, stop degrading them. But here it is. And I just want to let Kayla know that, and I hopefully speak for you, Kyle, but we appreciate you, Kayla, if you're listening.
I mean, there's a reason we asked her to come on the pod as our co-host, right? You
know, that's true.
It's been over a year now, but you can definitely speak for me on that. Appreciate you, Kayla. Sad you couldn't be with us this week, but still appreciate it. And if you want to follow Kayla, you can at NorthDakayla74. Alessandra's at AM_Senator. I'm at Senra Says. Podcast, of course, at FPC_FantasyPod. Of course, as always, download the full press coverage app. And, you know, anywhere, all Apple and Android stores for free. So, you know, download for free and get access to all of our written content, our podcast, and the full press radio network. Well, those were good final thoughts, I think. So I don't know if you have anything else to say, but I definitely appreciate that impassioned speech. You don't have to apologize for, you know, trying to fight for human rights. So that's great. Thank you.
And thanks, Kyle, for allowing me to rant for a second. It's just something I need to get off my chest, and tweets don't really do it. But I'm ready for week 3 for the other teams, not for the Jets.
And of course, thank you to the listeners for listening to this episode of the Full Press Fantasy Pod.